Welcome to Pets Tell the Truth. This program is dedicated to understanding our animal companions on a deeper level. I'm Dr. Agnes Thomas, psychologist and animal telepathic communicator. I'll be your host as we listen to what our animal friends are saying and as we appreciate the way they view the world, their missions, and their spiritual insights. My guest tonight is Rebecca Richardson Ferris, who will talk to us about wolves. The first part of the show will be a discussion period, and the second part is reserved for listeners to call in with questions. The worldwide toll-free number is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. And we'd love to hear from you tonight. Today's show is brought to you by Garnett Publishing of Cleveland, Ohio. Garnett is calling for finished manuscripts, so if you have a manuscript that you would like to share and see in print, contact them at www.garnettpublishing.com. That's Garnett with two T's. Or you can telephone them directly at area code 216-458-6100. They are the publisher of my book, Pets Tell the Truth, A Mystical Journey into the Animal Mind. The book is available in bookstores everywhere and also on Amazon.com. Tonight we're going to talk about wolves. My guest is Rebecca Richardson Ferris. She is a licensed veterinary technician, a professional dog trainer, and is the owner of Dutiful Doggies. Becky has been an animal communicator her entire life, and I have to thank her because she taught me much of what I know. Becky is a well-known wolf rescue person, and she takes rescued wolves and trains them to be house pets. Her own wolves are trained actors, and her wolf, Dusty Rose, starred with Kevin Costner in Dances with Wolves. Welcome to the show, Becky.
Thanks. Glad to be here with you.
It's wonderful to be here, to have you with us. You're such an interesting person. Becky, can you tell the listeners how you got interested in wolves?
Yeah. I had an older sibling who was 11 years older than I was. And when he got to be an adult and I was still a kid, he had a wolf as a pet. And Rocky was just completely different than any dog I had ever been around. He was just more intense and more loyal, more dedicated. There was just something special about him. And so once I graduated from college and came back, then I started I bought my first wolf, Dusty Rose, and then started rescuing him after that.
Before your brother had the wolf, were you afraid it was going to bite you?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Rocky.
The wolves sort of have a reputation in the movies anyway that you can be eaten by wolves and stuff. They're not like that, are they?
No. And actually, I think where that all came from, my opinion on it, is we were all raised with the fables of Little Red Riding Hood, Three Little Pigs.
Yes. It's amazing how that stuff stays with you, and those are just, childhood stories. You're right. Becky, isn't the wolf the ancestor of all dogs? Aren't they the genotype for all dogs?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Nowadays we consider even the smallest version of dogs, chihuahuas, et cetera, came from the basic wolf.
So wolves are the genotype. That would mean all other dogs, regardless of strain, are the phenotype. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So even, how do you get, do you know anything about how you breed a little dog like a chihuahua using the same genetic codes or almost the same genetic codes as the bigger dog?
Honestly, I don't. I've never had to deal with it.
Well, I did some work with rats. I don't know if this is similar, but we mixed breeds. What we were doing is we were trying to breed an animal that had rapid breathing and crossed it with an animal that had slow breathing and see what came out. But after you breed so many traits, you get an animal that is, it goes back to the original. In other words, we were using white rats. We ended up getting a mutation that were brown rats, even though the both parents were white. So it must be some genetic throwback that makes them different. It's almost like you have. I think I'm trying to say that all dogs are actually mutations of wolves.
Okay, that would make sense. Would make sense. And just, you know, years and years of different breeding.
Right, right. I was surprised when I met your wolves that how sweet they are. When you picked me up at the airport, I went to visit Becky some years ago, and when she picked me up at the airport, she had her wolf Raven in the car, and honestly, the first time I saw Raven's teeth, he looked like an alligator. I thought he was going to eat me.
And she was only, 6 months old when you came out to visit? She was still really young.
So it's really interesting because what you said about Little Red Riding Hood and what's the other one?
Three Little Pigs.
Oh, yeah, and the big bad wolf threw the house down or something. I've often wondered how that got how they got portrayed as seeking humans as prey. You're a professional dog trainer. Is training a wolf any different than training a dog?
Oh yes. The wolves are so much more independent. Dogs always want to please. Excuse me. They always want to please, and so they'll try to desperately do what you ask them to. If the wolf does not see a reason to do it, they won't do it. For instance, when I was training Dusty, I took her to an obedience class, a regular dog obedience class, and she would do whatever activity we were asking, like if we were asking them to come clear across the room, she would. She would come clear across the room, sit in front of me, and then she'd never do it again. It was like, okay, I did this. I did it right. That's it.
Why repeat it, right?
Exactly.
You've been an animal communicator your whole life. When you ask them, like the example you just gave, training Dusty to come across the room, did you communicate with her and ask her why she wasn't going to do it again?
Yes, and she used to tell me, she says, well, I did it. You know, in her world, if she had done it, she didn't need to prove she needed to do it again.
She didn't understand the reason for repetition, right?
In her world, there wasn't a reason for it. She'd already done it.
Gosh.
She was ready to learn the next thing.
What kind of things do they do in the movies? I know that you've talked to me before about having Shalico and some of the other wolves that you had trained to run up a mountain and so on. How do you keep track of them, and how do actors, dog actors or wolf actors, how do you keep them all together? And how do you train them to do what's in the script?
With that, you do repetition. You take them and show them, for instance, Shalico running up a hill. You would take her, show her the hill. You would have myself on one end of it, and then probably her dad, my husband, on the other end of it. and we would call her back and forth in between us till she got the idea of that was the path she would run.
Okay.
And if I needed more incentive than that, what we would do is drop, well, Shalika used to do anything you'd want her to for an almond. She loves almonds. And so I would drop almonds, like little trail markers, between the two of us.
Oh.
And she would go and she'd pick up the almonds on her way up to her daddy.
So little treats as reinforcement.
Uh-huh.
Hmm. Are they afraid of the camera?
No. Mine aren't, because mine aren't raised like real wolves. Mine live in the house. They sleep on the bed, they sleep on the couch. So they're used to all different kinds of things that people have around them.
Okay.
Where, yes, a wild one would be not only scared of the camera, but they'd be scared of the people to be around. And mine are just used to being around everything, people, especially other animals.
When Dusty appeared in as Tusox in Dances with Wolves, I saw on television a little clip about how they were training her, and what they were doing was offering her a piece of bacon for her to come close enough to Kevin Costner so that she would interact with him.
Uh-huh.
Is that how they actually did it, or is that just something they showed to say how Kevin was able to deal with her?
We took her down. He has a ranch right here close to where I live, and we took her down there a lot and would have him feed her treats and nummies. And yeah, bacon was one of the things she loved, and she loved chicken, hot dogs, and we would just, until she got completely relaxed around him and vice versa, because he had never been around one,
uh-huh.
around a wolf, and just let them get used to each other, to become friends.
How long does that take, like a month or so?
It all depends on both the animal, and remember, mine are really socialized, so it doesn't take them half as long to get used to somebody. I can usually get mine, if I introduce them first at my house and then take them someplace and introduce them then again, I can usually get my animals to interact with somebody within a week to 10 days.
Hmm. Okay, so they know that if mommy lets them in the house, somebody in the house, it's mommy's friend and it's okay to be with them?
Right.
If they meet in another context.
Right.
You also told me that Dusty, to make her paws look whiter, her front paws, that they sprayed her with paint?
No, we did for shoe polish.
White shoe polish?
White shoe polish. Because she and her counterpart, because there was actually two, we needed them to look identical.
Oh.
And so we did. We used white shoe polish.
So there were two dogs, or two wolves, actually. One could rest and the other one, you know, could take a turn and so on. They could trade off back and
right.
forth.
Because a animal actor can only be on set 4 hours total in a day.
Oh. Hmm. So dogs like Beethoven and others, Benji, they can only work so many hours, right?
They can only be on set 4 hours a day.
Is there a special actors' guild for animal actors?
Yes and no. Yes and no, actually. The Hollywood SPCA follows all of the requirements and all that for the animals. So, well, like, for instance, Shalico, we were filming another movie called The Staircase here outside of Santa Fe, and there were three horses, and Shalico had been around horses all her life, since that had her, and she decided to chase the horses instead of going between her father and I. And immediately I got a call the next day asking what had went wrong, why she had gone after the horses, had any of them been hurt, where did they go, where did she go. I mean, they knew it. They knew it instantly and wanted to know how we were going to fix it for the next shooting.
Do they ever have, do they have people like from the ASPCA or the Humane Society or something on the set while you're doing this?
Yes.
They do have a representative there?
Yes.
What's their job?
To make sure
that the animal isn't hurt?
Yes, to make sure the animals are treated correctly, that they are not hurt, that they're not put in any dangerous situation, i.e., you know, we should have moved the horses further away from where we were filming. At that, you know, even though she had, you know, the three I used in that one had all been around horses before, we should have had the horses tied up further
under
away
control,
from
yeah.
them. And they would have caught that.
Hmm. So if they're using horses in movies, and they use them in lots, are there certain horses in each state that they use, or do they cart them around the country, the same horse?
No, usually there's horses in each. There's actually animals usually that belong to each state's Actors Guild.
Oh, I see.
And there's a directory. If I couldn't think of the word. There's a directory that's put out by each state's film commission.
I see. So if you want to go to Kentucky and shoot a scene with a horse, you don't have to schlep the horse all over the country. You can just get one there, right?
Right.
That is used to acting and performing.
Right.
Hmm. Becky, tell us a little bit about the spirituality of wolves. The most evolved being as an animal that I've ever talked to since I've been an animal communicator was your wolf, Shalico. When I communicated with Shalico, it was such a deep honor, and I mean, just a waves of humility came over me that I could talk to such a being. It was like talking to a guru or talking to a saint. Tell us a little bit about how they feel. And are all animals the same way? Very spiritual?
No, I don't think they are. The wolves that I have, and actually just some of the wolves I have dealt with, are more evolved and more spiritual than other ones. Shalico, for instance, is very, very spiritual. And she, there really hasn't been a question I haven't been able to get her to answer about wolves and why they're here and, you know, what their interactions are and, you know, why she would do something. Dusty was that same way. But yet, Raven, the one I have now, she's far from being spiritually evolved. She's more like your typical class clown.
Poor Raven. Some of the things, you know, I've talked to Shalico in the spirit world. Both Shalico and Dusty Rose are in the spirit world. And they are so knowledgeable about the spirit world or the afterlife that many times when I talk to them, they blow my socks off, really. They say the most beautiful things. One time I was talking to... I think it was Shalico. Anyway, I asked her what she was doing in the afterlife, and she said she was working with the Wolf Council. Could you tell us what that is?
Each species has like a board in the spirit world, and certain, you know, evolved animals are on this board. And they're the ones who keep in contact with all of that species, whether they're in the spirit world or here with us. They keep in contact with all of them. And that way they know what's going on in the wolf world, so to speak, all over. They keep in contact with each other. They know where trouble spots are, where they just keep track of everything that species does.
And their welfare.
Yes.
So supposing, just out of curiosity, the Wolf Council, these are beings that have never been incarnated on Earth. Is that right?
No. Because Shalico and Dusty both work with the Wolf Council.
Okay. But if they, supposing the pollution contents of the Earth changes or the water changes, is the Wolf Council responsible for, you know, making modifications in the wolf or keeping in touch so that they don't, that their species doesn't become extinct?
Yes. Yes, they will. They will be notified, so to speak, by, you know, one of the wolves that's dealing, you know, that's affected by it here, and then they pretty much discuss what it would take to change it and keep them on an even keel, and then they make that change throughout the wolf kingdom.
The whole thing. So
yes.
So in other words, supposing our oxygen level went down from 20% to 19%, that would require a change, right?
Yes.
Some sort of adaptive change. Now animals can, you know, still survive if they're exposed to low oxygen, because obviously you live in the Hamath Mountains, and the oxygen where you live is a lot less than it is here. The pressure is a lot less. So would that change just within the animals at that level, or would that generalize to all animals so that they could adapt to different levels of oxygen?
Well, let's ask Shalico what she would say. They would adjust in that region.
Okay. But not in those at sea level.
Correct.
Okay. So they would become they are adapted. Okay.
Then, like, say one moved from Ohio to New Mexico, then they would have the ability to adapt out here because all of these would have already adapted, and they can show that one how.
I got it. Okay. You told me something about animals, how they cure themselves, and that they look for certain herbs. How do they know how to do that?
Kind of like we recognize different plants or different strains of things. They have been shown those specific things in their evolvement, so they recognize them the same way we do.
Native Americans often talk about that when they were in, they're very close to the earth and very kin to everything that's alive. They said that the plant actually talks to them. And, of course, you and I know that you can talk to plants and plants will talk back to you. But the plant will tell them what they need to make them well. Have you ever heard of that, Becky? If a plant has communicated with an animal, how would that be sort of like just an intuitive type thing?
Supposing I would say that, yes.
So
they would recognize the abilities of each other.
I see. I've also noticed that there are many angels around animals. Has that been your experience too?
Yes, yes. They're just, animals are a lot more connected with the spiritual world and the whole being where we're not.
No. Can you tell us about, was it Shadow who went to the Oklahoma City bombing?
Mm-hmm.
And because you've trained your dogs to be rescue dogs too. Was it Shalico that went to the Oklahoma City bombing?
No, it was Shadow. It was Shadow.
Shadow.
And Cocker.
Shadow. Tell us how you trained them to do that. What did they look for, and what was Shadow's experience?
Actually, what Shadow was trained for was cadaver searches, which is dead bodies.
Uh-huh.
And the way you train them, and this is going to sound a little weird, but the way you train them to relate that smell
uh-huh.
is you go to a dentist and get old teeth. And teeth have that decay smell the same as a cadaver does.
Oh, well, sure, because there's blood vessels and everything in the teeth.
And you hide the teeth. And, you know, you start real easy. You don't hide them. You just lay them like a foot in front of the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as the dog starts sniffing that, you know, you make it the biggest ordeal in their life. And then you just make it harder and harder and harder for them to have to find it.
To detect the scent?
Yes.
I see. So do you label it or anything? Do you say, this is what I want you to look for? How do you do it?
They will sniff it because it, at the beginning, they'll sniff it because it's something, it's a different smell.
Uh-huh.
And the moment they start sniffing around that tooth and around that smell that's around that tooth,
uh-huh.
you tell them how wonderful they are. Yes, that's it. That's what you wanted. Good dog. And then they learn that any time they show you that they have found that smell, that they
sure,
get a reward and they get to play.
I
and
see. When Shadow went to Oklahoma, there was a lot of burned rubble and stuff around. He could still discern the smell of flesh.
Oh yeah.
All those other smells.
Oh, yeah, because they learn it's very distinctive, very, very distinctive. It's like you train, you know, you can train dogs to be bomb dogs. You can train them to be drug dogs. You can train them to be cadaver dogs.
Uh-huh.
Live people searches, search and rescue. And it's because you teach them that specific scent.
That's what they do.
Right. It's that specific scent that they're looking for.
I understand that there are dogs that can smell cancer on a person.
Yeah. It's their, you know, their sense of smell is far beyond
yeah,
a human's would ever be.
Yeah, because they get 80% of their information through scent.
Right.
Whereas we get 80% of our information through vision. How many days was Shadow there?
We were there for 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah. Because they can only work. When we first went out there, it was, you know, almost 24 hours around the clock. But then as time goes on, you lessen the time they're out there, because they get real depressed, they get real upset, really emotional. And, you know, even once I brought her home, it took her several months to get back to being, you know, her typical little playful Cocker Spaniel self.
Did you talk to her about it, or did you think that would not be appropriate? Or I would be very interested to see what Shadow said about it.
You know, I talked to her about, you know, it was a good thing she was doing. It was, you know, it was the appropriate thing to do. And that once we came back home, it was so traumatic on her that I've never done any more cadaver searches with her. That was so traumatic on her that I've never since then used her.
Because she probably sent, you know, smelled decay, you know.
And the trauma that was associated with.
I'm sorry?
The trauma that was associated with all of those deaths. It was just.
They used them at the Twin Towers when they went down, too. The dogs were at it for days and days and days. And I remember you saying, oh, it's so hard on those dogs because they never, you know, even though they're doing their job and they're finding what they're supposed to, they're not finding anybody alive.
Right. And that's hard on them. That's very hard on them. Because, you know, a dog loves to please humans, and they love to get that, you know, the love and the affection and the petting and the...
the praise.
And if you think about it, what they're finding, those people aren't loving and cuddling and, you know, praising them and petting them and...
makes them sad.
Yeah. And they feel the trauma that those people went through.
Well, I'll ask our listeners to call in. The toll-free number, again, is 877-876-5227. Now, that's worldwide. And we would appreciate you calling in. Becky is a very experienced dog trainer, and she has been an animal communicator her entire life. You were born with this gift, weren't you, Becky?
Yeah, yeah. The first time I actually remember realizing I had it was about the age of 4. And, you know, it was just from that moment on, I just thought everybody could do this.
Mm-hmm. Unlike myself, who went and learned it from a professional animal communicator. And so I've been an animal communicator for about 14 years, 15 years. But you are much more experienced. Is that why you went into veterinary work?
No, actually, I went into veterinary work so that I could help my own animals. 'Cause as you well know, I have numerous animals of my own. And it was easier for me to be able to help them when they were hurt or sick than it was for me to take them someplace to a stranger.
Uh-huh.
Where if mommy could do it here, the trust level was just so much greater.
Uh-huh.
And therefore their response.
And you were able to intuit what was inside their body and what was going on, because you have the medical background.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's like me. It's, you know, I can look in the body and I can find out what's wrong. And of course, I watch my animals very, very closely, and I'm very aware of any subtle changes in their behavior. And I know if it's, you know, they're not feeling good or they have a tummy ache or something. But I know right away when something's not right. And then, of course, I don't have the training in veterinary medicine that you have, because I wouldn't know what medicine to give them or anything. So I just trust the vet. But you are able to treat your dogs yourself because you know of the medicines that animals get.
Yeah. It just makes it a lot easier, I think. on them and on me also, because, you know, as you all know, with the connection we have with our pets, it's hard to take them and leave them in somebody else's care.
It is. It is very hard. Even though I have had the same vet for 40 years, it's like leaving my baby there, and I'm, you know, I get so nervous, and I'm, you know, I can feel my heart shaking and everything inside, just worrying, even though I know that it always comes out okay. There's always that fear that I'm going to lose my animal. Of course, I never did, but I mean, of course, they die of old age, but other than that, there's just something very scary about turning over your animal to someone else for care.
And I think it's scary to them also. And that's why it made it easier for me, because then I can keep them here at home and treat them. They don't have to stay. And, you know, all of mine know their vets quite well, but it's still not home.
Sometimes when I talk to you on the phone, I can hear the wolves in the background howling. And it is such a beautiful sound.
Let me see if we can
love
get Raven.
It. I loved it when I visited you, and I could hear them howling. Oh, it was just gorgeous music.
Let me see if we can get Raven to do that. Hold on, I'll go out in my front yard, because
okay.
Then she'll want to go out with me. Let's see if she can hear me out in the front yard. Maybe she'll answer me. Raven! Raven! I'm hoping she'll do this. Sometimes she won't. And you may hear one of my other dogs barking, so just ignore that part.
Okay. Raven! Raven! Nope, I didn't say you. Come here. Huh. Raven! Raven!
Huh. She's ignoring me completely. Oh, there she is.
What, Micah? Talk to Mommy.
They're not going to. We'll wait and see if they... Excuse me, if they will later. While we're on the phone sometime. And if they start howling, I'll rush outside so you can hear them.
Okay, because it really is a beautiful sound. I love hearing it. And it's so orchestrated, and then they all join in.
It's
just
amazing on how well they harmonize.
Yes.
They are. It's amazing how well they harmonize with each other. They even teach, actually. They've even taught my Cocker Spaniel I was telling you about, Shadow. They've even taught her how to howl.
They taught Shadow Eureka. How to howl?
I'm trying to...
Eureka!
One of my dogs just took off. Hold on. Okay, here she comes.
I'm going to do a short commercial while you're trying to get Raven to cooperate. Be sure to listen to BBS Radio on Thursday evening at 7 p.m. for Metaphysical Straight Talk with my friend Atira Hatton. Atira is a gifted psychic who can tune into your heart's mission in this life. Atira is associated with Edgar Cayce's Association for Research and Enlightenment. She was chosen out of more than 4,000 psychics to be a representative for them, and she is a sought-after speaker on spirituality and metaphysics. Very interesting person, very loving, and very fun to talk with. How are we doing with Raven?
Well, actually, her daddy's going to go outside and see if he can make her howl, because she's ignoring me completely.
Okay. They never do it in front of a company, especially when you want them to. Tell me about the hierarchy of wolves in a pack. How do you know who's the boss? Who's the dominant one? Is there a way to tell that?
Oh yeah. All the rest respond. For instance, like when I had Shalico,
mm-hmm.
all the rest, if Shalico would eat first, then the rest would eat. Shalico would come out of the gate first to come in the house.
So this is a really respect thing. And she acted, she's sort of the matriarch, and this is just out of respect that they do this, they follow her?
Yes, and they, I mean, like if one of them is acting up,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, to the point where she doesn't see what they're doing as appropriate,
mm-hmm.
she can just let out a low growl from clear across the room. Yeah, Rob couldn't get him to howl either. She can just let out a really low, quiet growl from across the room, and all of them stop what they're doing. Dusty would just have to look at the other members of her pack, and they would stop what they were doing.
Was Dusty Rose the matriarch and the leader when she was alive?
Oh, yes. Oh, by a far margin.
She was a very intelligent animal. I had the opportunity to talk to her a couple times in the spirit world. Well, actually, I talked to her once before she died, too, and she was extremely intelligent. I was so impressed. Tell us a little bit about Dusty.
Dusty was my baby. Dusty was the first wolf. I had ever owned. And actually, my husband and I went and got her because he wanted a dog of his own because we had just got married and I had two dogs. And she ended up my dog anyway. But she knew she was a wolf. And so if you called her a dog, honestly, she would look the other direction.
That was like, how dare you call me a commoner?
Exactly.
Right?
But if you would tell her, you know, oh, Dusty, you're such a wolf, then she'd look at you. She'd have no problem with that. But she would not even acknowledge somebody if they called her a dog.
What is this thing they do with their tails?
Meaning?
When you see a wolf with their tail tucked under, what are they doing? What does that mean?
They're being submissive. Like, mine will do that to me. Now, although Puma, my chow wolf cross right now, is the leader. Just a moment. Excuse me. Is the leader of my pack. She's my alpha.
Mm-hmm.
She is still lower in stature in the pack than I am.
Oh, I got it. I just watched a segment of Cesar Chavez, the dog whisperer.
Yes.
And he said, it doesn't matter how many animals you have in the family, how many different kinds, you still have to be the leader of the pack. You have to be the top alpha of all of them, all the different animals. So that's what you just said, that even though Puma now is the alpha, Puma is still submissive to you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And she'll tuck her tail. She'll tuck her tail if she has done something wrong and I'm correcting her with my voice. That's the one thing that is a big difference between wolves and dogs. Though in all of my training, I don't do any physical correction. I do it all by voice. The wolves will never, how do I put this? The wolves, if for any reason you were to strike a wolf, like a lot of people train their dogs that way, the wolf will not forget it. You're going to not beat them into submission. You're going to beat them into being mean because they're going to protect themselves. Where a dog you could beat into submission.
But that's not really a good thing to do, is it? There are a lot of young men who beat their dogs into submission, and I feel that's absolutely unnecessary, although I can't speak from experience because I never really had a dog.
Well, you know, that's what I said. In all of my years of training, I don't believe in physical correction. You know, I trained from the animal's point of view. And so, you know, when they're puppies, if they, you know, bite me or whatever, you know, just because they have to learn not to put, you know, just like babies put everything in their mouth, so do puppies. And they just have to learn that my human hand is not part of their mouth. So I just turn them upside down because that's what the mom wolf would have done.
Turn them upside down so they're on their backs?
Because that's what their mom would have done, their four-legged mom would have done.
Oh,
and
so it makes them like the almost like a victim that she towers over them, right?
Right.
Are they harder to? Well, of all the different strains of dogs that you've experienced, what are some of the easier ones to train?
Golden Retrievers. They're just a real submissive breed, period.
What about your German Shepherd? You have a very hybrid German Shepherd.
Yeah, that's the one that just went cruising down the street a minute ago right before your commercial. I was trying to get to come back home. She chased a rabbit down the street.
Eulika.
Yeah.
That's her name. And was she easy to train?
She is easy. She's been one of the easiest animals I've ever had in my life to train. But that's because of her intelligence level. It also makes her one of the more difficult animals because she thinks herself in and out of situations.
I was surprised that when you got her and she was so young that without even showing her what to do, she knew to protect you.
Yeah.
Is that like instinct in a German Shepherd?
That's a lot of their breeding, yes.
It's like she knew what to do and nobody told her.
And she's actually done that. That's why I said, you know, her intelligence is one of her best attributes and also one of her worst. Because she will do stuff without being shown, without ever being explained to. And so then I expect her to always do that. And the situation would have changed, and she's thinking of a different way to deal with it in that situation.
Have you encountered wolf crosses, wolf mixes, and do they behave the same as the pure wolf?
It all depends on how much wolf they have in them. Puma, the wolf chow cross, I would say no. She responds more like a dog. Micah is one of my wolf crosses. I have no clue what the other part of her is. She responds more like a wolf does. Cassiopeia is my wolf coyote cross, and she responds more. Well, she doesn't have any dog in her, but out of the two, the coyote or the wolf, she responds more like a wolf does.
Sometimes she gets her feelings hurt. Is that true with dogs as well?
I think the wolves are more emotional and more sensitive than the dogs, but like Eureka, my shepherd, but she's extremely sensitive, where my cocker and even Puma, the chow wolf cross, they're not as sensitive like that.
Cassie,
they don't get their feelings hurt that easy.
Mm-hmm. What should a person do who really loves wolves? And I can see why you love wolves, because when I met yours, I fell in love with them. I thought they were much sweeter than dogs, much sweeter than dogs. And what if someone would like to get involved with wolf rescue? What would be a good place to start?
Actually, getting a hold of me, sending me an email, because there are some rescue organizations in numerous states across the country. And I can get them in touch with those. And, you know, because all of us who rescue them always are looking, you know, for volunteers to help, you know, take care of them, help socialize them.
Are there foster homes for wolves that are rescued until you, how do you go about the adoption process?
Most of the rescue organizations don't adopt out. I do, but I'm real finicky about where they go, extremely finicky about where they go. I don't recommend wolves just as a general pet. I think that's where a lot of people get in trouble with them, is they think they're just like a dog, and they're not.
They're just a gorgeous dog, but they think very different. Their mind is very different than a dog. How do they view the world? I mean, this is a wonderful animal that lived in the wild, and they are so free to be what they were created to be.
But remember, most of them that I rescue weren't out in the wild. Probably 90% of the ones I rescue have been in captivity. They have been bred by a breeder and, you know, sold to somebody.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, the wolf gets to be 12 months old. It's still got puppy mush for brains, but it's got the wolf-sized body, and they don't know what to do with it.
You mean the owner?
Right.
The person that adopted them. Because it's not like a dog.
No.
And they're expecting it to be like a dog. I think Raven was just about 2 years old, not quite two when I met her. And you kept saying she's a puppy.
Thought Raven was younger than that.
What?
Raven was younger than that, wasn't she? Because Raven's only 5 now.
Oh, she must have been about a year. She must have been about a year when I met her. She's adorable. Okay, Becky, what is your email address, if you don't mind, that people that are interested in assisting and contributing to wolf rescue groups, what is your email address so that they can contact you?
Okay, it's very appropriate. It's Wolf Becky, WOLFBECKY, @AOL.com.
That's simple enough to remember. Well, we're almost out of time. If there is a particular topic that the listeners would like to hear about animals, please email me at talktopets@AOL.com, or you can visit my website at www.petstellthetruth.com. If you like the show, you can contact the producers at www.bbsradio.com and let them know that you would like to hear more of this kind of programming. Becky, thank you so very much for being our guest tonight. It was very informative, and I really learned a lot about wolves and how they see the world and just what their viewpoint is. They're very much different than my encounters with regular dogs. Again, please tell us your email address.
It's Wolf Becky, WOLFBECKY, at AOL.com.
You can go for as long as you want, ladies. The next show is not going to be available, and so we've got an extra hour. That's up to you.
Okay.
You do with it as you please.
Becky, you want to talk for another hour, or you want to just sign off?
I'd rather sign off.
I think I would, too. You know what? If you don't have another show done, just play one of my archives. Okay. Well, thank you again for listening. It was a great pleasure to talk to you, Becky, as always. You're so knowledgeable, and I just love it because you have contact with animals that I have never had contact with. This is Dr. Agnes Thomas saying good night. And listen in again next week. Also, you can sign up for my newsletter. Go to my website and scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, and you can sign up for my newsletter. 2 weeks from now, we're going to have a lady who works with energy healing, vibrational medicine, and Talza is going to tell us about vibrations that she feels in her hands and how she has been able to feel tumors and other diseases in the body. And then we're going to have somebody on the following week from Petco to tell us about a little bit about the Petco family and the kind of things that they do for hurricane victims and so on. It's really quite heartwarming. Anyway, this will be announced in my newsletter. And so it will be sent to you next Sunday. If you want to sign up, sign up. We have in the newsletter something called Animal Tales. There's always information about your pets and other pets. Dogs for the senior citizens, should senior citizens get a dog, and how it keeps them alive and it keeps them fresh and young. Many interesting things in the newsletter. Sign up. This is Dr. Agnes Thomas again saying good night, and good night, Becky. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.